The College Game Day podcast is presented by Old Dominion Freight Line, helping the world keep promises.
We got a real simple plan. One man, one mission.
Georgia has won the national championship. Touchdown!
If you're a fan, you might think this is sports heaven.
This might be college football heaven.
This is ESPN's College Game Day podcast. Now alongside Pete Thamel is Reese Davis.
Let them eat steak. For the last time, the race for the ribeyes, we come to the final Saturday of the season, Championship Saturday, where we will make selections and talk other things, college football. And, you know, I'm not trying to be a downer, but it's the most anticlimactic Championship Saturday of the college football playoff era. But we are still excited to see ball. Glad to have you with us. College Game Day podcast, Reese Davis, Pete Thamel, and Bill Connolly. Bill has torn himself away from watching World Cup to come and grace us with his presence and talk college football.
It's Are we definitely sure he's not on, watching. It's definitely not on right above the laptop right now.
Who's playing right now, Bill? As we record this,
it is Poland versus Argentina, and depending on how things go, I might have to really carefully switch over to Mexico, Saudi Arabia. But we'll see how this goes.
Okay. All right. So those games will not be part of the race for the ribeye selection. Pete, has anybody been hired for a job today?
Nobody has been hired for a job today. Ren Baker, the North Texas AD, became the AD at West Virginia today. That went down this morning around.
What does that mean? What do you suspect that means for Neil Brown?
I suspect the fact that, well, let's look at how Auburn handled this, right, Reese? Auburn fired Brian Harsin before they brought in John Cohen. So the new AD didn't have to like leave his introductory press conference with a bloody knife, like going after the coach and walking down the hall of the football complex. Probably not a great look to have, to have a bloody glove your first day on the job. So I would think that logic would lead us to think that Neil Brown winning 2 out of 3 against 2 of the better programs in the Big 12, if not the better teams this year, would give him a little leeway. And let's face it, there are not a lot of Big 12 teams that will be in the Big 12 5 years from now that have the appetite to spend $17 million to get rid of their coach. So the signs point to Neil Brown staying at West Virginia. Whether those are realities, I mean, those – that you're not in a job interview going to say, I'm going to fire a coach who I don't know and have no idea about his program. So if it has not been done already, I would think the prevailing thought there is that it won't happen in the upcoming days. Remember when Mike Bone took USC from Cincinnati? It was three, four years ago. Clay Helton was on his perpetual asbestos pants hot seat and just finding different ways to survive in advance. And Mike Bone made a really good point, like a day or two into the job. It might have been before he took it, because everyone's like, oh, he's going to come in and fire Clay Helton. It's like, look, I don't even know what I'm hiring to. I don't know the strengths of the program. I don't know the weaknesses of the program. I don't know the players in the program. I don't know the personnel in the program. I don't know the infrastructure. I don't know how we're set up compared to our conference. I don't know anything. So how can I make a decision this big when I don't even know like what I'm making the decision for and about? And I always thought that was very sound logic to, hey, if you're going to come in and do this, it'd be disingenuous to fire the coach within a week. They actually waited, and then Clay won a little bit, and they waited a little longer, and then they didn't wait at the start of last year. But I did think philosophically, to me, that notion made a lot of sense. So that was a longer answer than he probably wanted.
If you do it the other way, then it's pretty clear that someone else is calling the shots, almost certainly, or the new guy's being reckless, and neither of those things are good. I mean, those are bad philosophical approaches.
The notion on Neil, and nobody said this out loud at West Virginia, but the notion on Neil is, does he take the Scott Frost, Jim Harbaugh route? Mm-hmm. A little less guaranteed money, bet on yourself.
Right.
That's a scenario that's sort of been theorized in this round. So look, there's some golf.
And just by definition, that can go one of two ways. It can go the Harbaugh way, or it can go the Frost way.
Right? those are really the only two times that I recall seeing that in my years covering college football. So yeah, one's a pretty happy ending. I mean, one's one of the great turnarounds in college football. And then the other one is, well, they got Matt Rhule. So that's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it worked out. And the other thing is, if Matt Rhule doesn't work, which I think it will, mm-hmm. but if it were to not work, mm-hmm. I have no idea. No idea. Fair. I mean, that's you know, what to do there, because you hired the favorite son who took a program that was 0-12. Maybe better players than 0-12, but they were still 0-12. And in 2 years, had them undefeated. Mm-hmm. You bring him home, seems like a slam dunk, doesn't work at all. Now you bring a guy who won at Temple. He took Baylor at its worst point, one of the worst points of any program in recent memory in college football. And he had them playing in New Year's Six games, you know, a hair away from the playoff. If that doesn't work, I no idea. I think it's going to. That's the good news for Sarah and all other Nebraska fans. But to be fair to them and also to bring them down today, then I also thought Scott Frost was going to work.
That's the one thing I've learned about coaching changes over the last few years. It's just finally I've internalized that, you know, we're wrong about some of these jobs, but at the same, or some of these hires, but at the same time, if a guy wanted a bunch of other jobs and didn't win with you, it's probably you. And Frost obviously made plenty of mistakes, and the special teams he managed to put out every year was abysmal. He had plenty of his own problems. But if you go from turning around you at UCF and you know winning a national title, quote unquote, there to not being able to even get above water at Nebraska, that's a lot on Nebraska too. So we'll see what Rhule can do to unpack all that.
I've been surprised Frost hasn't gotten more run and these AAC level jobs. Like if you are hiring for the AAC, you have a coach who's gone undefeated in the AAC, dominated the AAC. So you would think at the very least, he has proven that he can be a high end AAC coach.
I'm not Scott Frost personal advisor by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it would be a terrible idea for him to take a job next year. I've got to think that whatever was going on at Nebraska, all of the pressure and everything with a lot of the stuff that happened that was candidly bizarre, and especially toward the end of his time there, he needs some time to decompress and get it right. You know, I had a conversation with Gus Malzahn about that, about taking another job so quickly after being run out. That wasn't his plan. And, you know, he actually told me, he said, actually, I agree with you in theory that it's a pretty good idea to take a step back. But because of the UCF job and what the potential of that is, that most coaches believe the potential it has and the shape that it was in when he was taking it over, he said it was one of the few that he wouldn't have passed on there. And obviously that's worked out pretty well for them, because he might win a conference championship if he can beat Tulane for a second time. I'm not sure how many of us think that they will and how many of us think that they won't, and how many of us will be contrarians just to try to have the other or the loser pay for the ribeye. So Taylor, let's go ahead. Maybe we can talk about some other things later, just depending on how talkative and undisciplined we are over the course of the picks. But let's launch in here. I mean, it's championship weekend. It's time to finish strong. It's like Jim Harbaugh said this week, quoting from the book of Harbaugh here, the first rule, it's not a principle, it's a rule of champions, is you don't let up. So the three of us, we haven't shown a lot of championship metal so far in terms of picking games, but let's not let up. Let's do it.
It is good.
Well, Reese, you keep saying that this championship weekend will be anticlimactic, but the race for the ribeye is nothing but fireworks and, you know, big car chases, right what you want at the end of a dramatic movie. So we've got all three of you. I don't know how this happened. You're all knotted at 52 correct selections. I mean, what are the odds of that happening going into week 14?
not very high, I would think. And Pete, actually, because you didn't do the hook thing yet, that Pete got a push last week, and the rest of us, we all got a push, I guess, with Alabama Auburn, right?
Collective push, yes.
A collective push.
Yes, and I think
all Pete because picked, the Alabama defense is clueless against that trick play called a quarterback draw. But that saved me and hurt you guys because I had Auburn in the points. So
innovation, Reese.
Well, let's get to it here. We're going to pick every one of these title games here. We're going to start with the Conference USA title game, North Texas at UTSA. UTSA is an 8.5-point favorite. Let's go Reese, Pete, Bill.
This was a really good game the first time they played. UTSA had to win it right at the end. The Mean Green been a little bit up and down in their running game. They've gotten a bunch of running backs hurt. They've got the oldest quarterback in the country, I think, in Austin Ani, who turn it over a little bit, but he'll also spin the bean for you. I want to, because that game is, you know, the 8.5-point spread. It feels like that's enough points for the Mean Green based on the last game. But I feel like they're almost begging you to take it. I mean, UTSA's had another great run. North Texas has been good most of the time. Like, I thought the easiest money on the board a couple of weeks ago was North Texas getting, I don't know, 7 or 8 at UAB, and they got blasted. They got lost by 20. So I don't think either of them played great last week. So they're not coming in all rolling. They both sort of, you know, putzed around a little bit. But I'm going to take UTSA and lay the points. I know how dangerous that is after the way the Mean Green played them the first time, but I'm going to go Roadrunners there.
Well, if there's one thing we know about our meep meep beloved Roadrunners is that they have no love for blowing people out. The Roadrunners are always perpetually and habitually playing close games. Now, Jeff Traylor's their coach, veteran high school coach. The stadium's named after him at Gilmer High School. He knows how to win a football game. What was it? The COVID year, they had like 3 game-winning kicks. It's just sort of like it's a little bit of a lifestyle for them. I'm looking at 31-28 Western Kentucky, 31-27 over North Texas, double overtime UAB. They did trounce Louisiana Tech and Rice, but they beat UTEP by a field goal last week. So I just think with the stakes what they are, I will put my stakes behind the Mean Green and a big old heaping helping of points.
I'm nice and relaxed now that the lead's gone. I'm you know, the U.S. national team here. I'm much better in a tie situation than I am with the lead. So I'm feeling pretty good here. My numbers love UTSA, but they are a funny team in that basically they end up going, you know, rising a lot in the rankings by blowing out bad teams, which is, you know, a predictive and important thing that tells you who's good and who isn't. But yeah, against every single team that is anywhere close to them in the rankings, they're basically playing a 3-6-point game. And that was certainly the case when they played North Texas a few weeks ago. This is, my gut has not treated me all that well in this contest recently, but my gut says UTSA has the 2 or 3 best players in this game, and so I'm gonna assume that in this kind of circumstance that means they end up winning by whatever it is, 10-12, something like that. Instead, SP Plus says 11. Which, you know, it did better than I did last week, so I should definitely lean on what it says, and we'll go with UTSA.
Come on, Frank Harris, put up some numbers. Let's go now.
That's right.
It is good!
The Pac-12 title game in Las Vegas, Friday night, 8 o'clock, USC, a 3-point favorite against Utah. Let's go Pete, Bill, Reese.
The Pac-12 title game. Do you like that this game's on Friday or not?
It opens up the schedule. I like that it opens up the schedule.
That was good. at least we're all not like-minded people here, and we disagree. And I asked the question because I could go either way. Now, part of it is I don't usually stay up very late on Fridays because I'm lame and old, but also I have to wake up early for game day, as does Reese, who actually has to do real work. I just have to talk about ankle sprains for 90 seconds. He's got to talk fluently and remember 6,000 names for 3 hours straight. I uh, Give me the line again, Charles. If you don't
I think mind. It's three.
Three. Yeah, that's right. It's three. So I took Utah last time in this game, and I believe they were favored. And I am not going to take them this time. I just feel like USC, a bunch of guys got hurt for USC in that game, if you remember. Eric Gentry got hurt. Mario Williams got hurt. Jordan Addison got hurt. And it seemed like a little bit of that caught up to USC, which while they got some starlets from the portal, don't have a ton of quality depth. They seem to have found some sync and some identity. And I just can't trust Utah's offense at this point to score 40-something points. And I would think somewhere in Alex Grinch's playbook, they can write in crayon, cover the tight end in capital letters. And if they can do that, they will end up winning this game by more than the score.
It's funny. Like in my head, trends have been pointing towards USC since they played last. But then I was looking at the results and, you know, compared to their projections and whatnot, and they just don't really – As much as the offense continues to improve, the USC defense is still just terribly mediocre. And Utah, meanwhile, obviously they blew a great shot against Oregon. That was a game they probably should have won considering Bo Nix's health and all that. But I my gut was telling me USC, and then everything I researched while putting together my preview just pulled me back towards Utah. And so I don't think I feel great about either one of these, but I guess give me the team that isn't favored here. Give me the one that's getting points. Give me Utah.
I think the number indicates, and I'm not a gambler. And that's been obvious and thankful for my financial statement after the way I've picked this year. But it seems to me that with the way these teams are playing with this small number, they're begging you to take USC. But when I watch Utah right now, I get the feeling of they are like Rocky in one of the Rocky movies in one of the fights he loses. They're getting they're just taking haymakers, but they don't fall. You know, I mean, they lost Keithy. Kincaid's banged up now. Cam Rising missed a game under mysterious circumstances. He says he's better now. Looked a little bit more like himself, albeit against Colorado. Makes a lot of folks look good. But, you know, I think I feel like Utah is keeping it together like with duct tape and baling wire, and the jalopy is going down the street and it's jangling, and they're willing their way to the finish line. And there's a lot of power in that. And Utah's won a lot of games like that just because they out-tough whoever they're playing. I sort of agree with Pete. I don't know how they can score enough. Like, they needed 43 to win last time in front of their crowd, their stadium, hostile atmosphere, high intensity. They needed 43, and I don't think they can get there. So I'm going to take SC and lay the points and say the Trojans, you know, for whatever you think about it, and I'll admit it, I'm fine. It'll be fun seeing them in the playoff, but the notion, I think, of new coach bringing in 26 players and going to the playoff, you hope it's an aberration, just to be honest. I'm all for player movement. I'm pro player. There are many, many cases in which players should be and need to get into a new circumstance. I don't think anything should be enacted to limit that until it becomes fully professionalized and it's a contract. Prior to that, they should be able to do it. But there's something that doesn't feel great about it, to be honest with you, but I think it's going to happen. So I'm going to take USC, lay the points, and do what we do in college football. We suspend disbelief. You know, you don't worry about the fact back in the day when we were kids that, you know, that your favorite running back, if you were an SMU fan, was driving a new Trans Am that was given to him by a booster and thereby making him ineligible. You enjoyed the fact that he was running for touchdowns, right? So, you know, if you're bothered by it, which admittedly, I guess I am a little bit, I really like watching them play, you know, so I really like watching SC play. So I will, I'll say SC is going to win, go to the playoff, and they will be a handful for whoever they get once they get in the playoff.
I think you could be pro player and pro continuity, right? Like that's, I don't think that's disingenuous. You can want to the teams, like I wish college basketball, I wish I knew who was on every team every year, you know, come November. And it's just not that way. And that's the way the sport's been designed. And I'm not bitter about it. I don't wish anybody who's transferred well or one and done, you know, ill will, but of at the same not, time, yeah. like as a consumer and a customer of the sport, and obviously this is a sport that supports fine livings for all of us. Like, I just think like, I don't think it's awful to think, okay, like we'd like to see consistency through it, not just be rooting or following, you know, uniforms and coaching staffs.
Yeah, you know, that's what I was getting at, I guess, because it's a copycat industry. NFL is a copycat league, so is college football. And if Lincoln Riley can do it, everybody in the world is going to think they can do it, you know? And you might have, I don't know, people have a right, though. They're all adults, including the players. They're adults. They have a right to make bad decisions, just like I do sometimes. So, you know, it's, you know, you always worry and say, well, they might make a bad decision if they leave their first school and go someplace else. Well, that's part of being a grown-up. Sometimes you have to make hard decisions, and sometimes they're the wrong ones, and you have to course correct. That's the way it goes.
One thing
that we got deep and philosophical fast, didn't we?
One thing it took me a while to accept was that, you know, I'm always very pro player and very pro parity. You know, the 07 season and all that. Like, I love both of those things. But the more pro player you get, you know, the more some of those players are going to gravitate towards certain schools. That's certainly the way it's been following European soccer through the years, is, you know, players have more freedom than ever. And look, like, the top 12 clubs get all the players they want. And so it is a contradiction there. You find yourself rooting for a contradiction. One last thing on USC Utah, by the way, the two things that have kind of changed since that game the first time around. Number one is Utah, like, they got gashed on the run. Caleb Williams had a long scramble. Travis Dye had a great game. They're defending the run much better than they were. They also actually sacked Caleb Williams, and it feels like nobody's been able to do that in weeks, because he's so escapable at this point, and because he's so dialed in. So could see a different level types of success for the USC offense.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
The College Game Day Ting Your Tang Tang Purple Tie Big 12 title game between TCU, a 2.5-point favorite, against Kansas State. That is at noon in Arlington, Texas. Let's go, Bill, Reese, Pete.
Speaking of contradictions, I am in a tough spot here where, you know, I'm a fan of new blood in the playoff, and so I'm kind of rooting for USC and TCU in that regard, because we know what happens if they both lose. We know who gets in probably instead, the opposite of new blood. But but while I can still kind of talk myself into Utah, it's been Kansas State is so good right now. And I realize TCU obviously blew out Iowa State last weekend, but you know, Will Howard got his first taste of action, kind of jumped in the second series last time TCU and Kansas State played. They go four straight touchdown drives, go up big, and then they don't score again. It was a really weird game. They've averaged like 45 points or something since then with Howard in the lineup. So I feel like if anything's changed from the last matchup, it's that K-State got way better. Their defense actually is kind of fading a little bit, so they're a different team on both sides, maybe. But I This one's tough for me. The SP Plus says TCU by 0.4, which I guess that gives me my line. I can still say TCU's going to win. They're just going to win by one. So K-State covers and TCU still goes to the playoff. I know there's a scenario where they can still lose and make it, but I'm not holding out hope. I think they probably need to win, and we'll say they do so, but barely. Give me K-State.
I am very respectful of the committee. I know it's a hard job. The only thing I can think of that would anger me on selection day would be TCU losing a normal game and not going. Now, most years I wouldn't say that. This year I would. They've earned the ticket, and the only way they can take the ticket, rip it up, and throw it in the fireplace and burn it to ashes is if they get blitzed. Yeah. Now, if they get blitzed, I'm not going to have their back, you know, but if they lose 35-28, 31-21, they just lose to a team they've already beaten, then I think they should go, and there really shouldn't be any question about it. You know, if they get blitzed, it's a different deal. But I'm really torn on this too. That second half that you were talking about after those scoring drives, they allowed Kansas State 4 first downs. Now, I know that Howard got dinged up a little bit for a while. Mm-hmm. He left the game, came back, wasn't really as effective after he came back. And I think they had less than 100 yards offense in the second half. TCU's been really good in second halves defensively of games. It's what is part of the reason they've been able to rally from these deficits. I don't know, man. I mean, maybe I should be loving K-State, and I do. I mean, I said on the preview show this year that everything in me wanted to pick K-State to win the Big 12, but their schedule scared me off a little bit. It wasn't because of the road game to TCU, by the way. I would show that I had the rest of the league all goofed up, but I think I'm gonna ride with the Hypnotoad. I think they're gonna win. And if they're gonna win, that's such a small number, with 2.5. I mean, I gotta think they're gonna win by a field goal. I guess they could Baylor it and do bazooka and kick the field goal or whatever. But I'm gonna take TCU and lay the 2.5.
I am obviously part of our job. We've all covered the NCAA tournament or been around the NCAA tournament a bunch and consumed hundreds of NCAA tournament games. And I am a huge believer in pucker power. I really do feel like with 18 to 22 year olds in giant moments when the stakes are exponentially higher for you, that there is the chance to pucker. Now, we talked a lot on this podcast. We joked about it here. We've joked about it on game day, Reese, about the Sonny Dykes fade. Well, it's been the Sonny Dykes surge. Let's face it. Like that, that is that the Sonny Dykes fade has gone the way of Clemsoning. in the vernacular. Do you remember like Dabo with his dramatic soliloquy killing Clemsoning off?
They even got mad when I was doing a game with Jesse Palmer once and he referred to it and they got really mad. But they even got mad at me when I redefined it and said that Clemsoning was playing in big games and winning championships. They got so sensitive about just the word. They didn't even want it redefined, but I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No problem. Bring your own axiom, right? That's what you have right. to do. So that said, the way that K-State has played at the end of this year and seeing just the electric surge that Will Howard has brought to that offense, and then you throw in a little of the pixie dust of pucker power, I am going to take the Wildcats, the ghosts of Bill Snyder emerging for a Big 12 championship on a sunny morning in a Walmart parking lot somewhere in suburban Dallas.
You know what? Short running back led the way for Kansas State in 2003.
Exactly.
Short running back on Saturday. I might have messed up with my pick now. I don't know.
And we know from the back half of this season, Kansas State doesn't win normal close games. They either win in a blowout or they lose a close game. So TCU's either in or they're blown out. And so we'll see.
Yeah.
It is good.
Apologies, gentlemen. I omitted this game from our email here, but we cannot not pick the MAC title game between Toledo, a 1.5-point favorite against Ohio in Detroit. Let's hear from Reese, Pete, Bill.
Okay, this is an interesting game. Bobcats lost Curtis Rourke, their starting quarterback, a couple of weeks ago. He was leading the MAC in yards and touchdowns. C.J. Harris got his first collegiate start against Bowling Green. I think he had, you know, three touchdowns in that game. Rockets also, their quarterback, Daquan Finn, has an ankle injury. Toledo's got really stingy defense. You know, that's what's the number again on that, Taylor? What's the line?
Toledo by 1.5.
Toledo by 1.5. I'm gonna take the Bobcats. The Bobcats have they have a sordid history. They've got a difficult history in actually winning the MAC. They've won the division, but they haven't won the MAC since that would be the Nixon administration, yeah. Or maybe LBJ, 1968 anyway. Depends on when they played and when the election was, I guess. But anyway, it's been a long time. So anyway, they won the division 5 times in the 2000s. They haven't won the MAC since 68. So I think even without their quarterback, I'm gonna say that Toledo's been struggling. They really haven't played well in their last 2 games. I'm going to say the Bobcats finally get it done.
So everyone who loves all things game day and watches game day on Saturday, there'll be a few quarterback injury updates that come through with that. And one of those key updates will be the health and status of Daquan Finn. He hurt his ankle a couple weeks ago against Ball State. They brought him back for a couple series against Western Michigan last Friday, and he didn't quite look like himself. So if one is considering investing in MAC games, which, let's face it, our listeners probably are, the health of Daquan Finn, your belief in Toledo, I think a lot of ways, is going to go with your belief in Daquan Finn. So the fact that he played a handful of series last week, he didn't look great, but they at least felt good enough to run him out there, would make you think that they're ramping him up a little bit for this game. You know, give Ohio credit. They sort of recrafted their offense without Rourke and found a way to win last week and punch their ticket to the MAC title game. But I am going to look at the Rockets' recent schneid as Finn related. Realize they have the number 29 defense in the country, which in the MAC is like having a top 10 defense because nobody plays defense in the MAC. And I'm going to say that the Rockets lift up the hardware. Jason Candle joins the immortal Toledo Tom Amstutz as the Rockets' last back-to-back conference title winner. They also won like 3 in the 60s. Toledo went like won like 35 games in the 60s. It was pretty remarkable. Bill got really excited when I said that.
No, I've written a little bit about those teams, shockingly enough. No, like the turn of the 70s Toledo teams, they lost like 1 game in 3 years or something. They were like a legit top 15 program there for a minute.
Couple Tangerine Bowl wins, Bill.
Chuck Ely, right? Quarterback.
That's right. Yeah. No, This one's hard because just trying to make sense of all the injuries in your head and what that might mean for the line. But I'm just going to lean on 2 pretty significant trends that started before the quarterbacks got hurt and blurred everything up here. Number one is that over the last 7 games, Ohio State has overachieved projections in my SP Plus ratings by 15 points a game. They were doing it even more. And then after Rourke got hurt, they only started overachieving by like 11 points, but that's still pretty significant. Meanwhile, Toledo was already underachieving before Finn got hurt. And over the last 5 games, they've underachieved by 17 points a game. So it's really been kind of trending up, trending down situation. And so you factor that in with the fact that my numbers say Toledo by only 0.9. I'm just going to flip over and say Ohio. I think, they've been favored in the MAC title game before. It'll be actually kind of annoy me if they finally win one and Frank Solich wasn't there for it. I mean, he got them so close so many times, but this does feel if trends matter at all, they point to Ohio.
You know, it's going to annoy you, Bill, when you get like 62 rocket emojis texted to you on Saturday afternoon. That's really going to annoy you.
That's fine. I have no problem. I love the glass ball. The glass ball is a weird place. I like Toledo a lot, but I'm going Bobcats.
I may even voice note some rendition of the anthem when the Rockets' red glare. I'll spare the singing to our podcast listeners. We don't want those shows showing up in the reviews. They already had pointed opinions on the mooing. I can't imagine what my singing would bring.
Can you sing the Toledo fight song?
Oh, I have no idea. I can't even sing the Syracuse fight song. That's where I went to school. So I could sing Hail to the Victors. I heard it enough on Saturday.
Next up is the Justice for JMU Sun Belt title game, Coastal Carolina at Troy. Troy, an 8.5-point favorite. Let's go Pete, Bill, Reese.
Well, if obscure conference injury updates are your thing, you're getting a back-to-back treat here. Grayson McCall, you know, one of the more established and accomplished quarterbacks in the country, has been dealing with a lingering injury. There's some ambiguity over his status. Jamie Chadwell has been coy in the media this week. So again, I would pay attention to pregame warmups. I'd probably watch College Game Day on Saturday morning to get a little better idea of old Grayson's status. Carlton Marshall, the leading tackler ever in college football, did not play the second half of the Arkansas State game for Troy. Troy's won 9 in a row, by the way, they haven't lost since the day we were in Boone and lost on that walk-off, which is totally wild. And Carlton Marshall is obviously the heartbeat of that whole program. And John Summerall's first year, he's really just been a remarkable. So he's been banged up. He's been banged up all year in some ways. So that's also another important status to follow if you're really buckling up on the belt or unbuckling on the belt, if you will, on Saturday. I'm going to take Troy in this game. I just feel like they have been consistent, and I feel like Coastal's winning. It has been on a tightrope, right? Like they've certainly, you can't knock what they've done. They certainly have consistently been one of the best programs in the country the last 3 years at the group of five level. But I feel like at this point, the empirical evidence on Coastal recently has not been good. 8.5 is not a huge number, but if you're going to like Troy for 4.5, you should probably like them for 8.5. So I am going to take the mighty Troy Trojans. John Summerall has executed one of the best turnarounds in college football this year. Is it the best turnaround numerically, Bill?
It's Tulane, right?
Tulane was more. Troy was, they lost a ton of close games last year, so they're like, their numbers weren't as bad as their record last season. So they kind of seemed poised they seemed poised to improve. They didn't seem poised to go 10-2 or whatever. So this was still a nice run. It so annoyed me when I saw the update on McCall this morning they were teasing that he might play. Cause before that news, this was the easiest pick on the board to me. Troy easy. Troy by double digits. I can tell you that the stats say that, but also my eyes saw that last week. They had kind of a championship moment against Arkansas State where they were just kind of wobbly for two and a half quarters. They were not looking very good. They were kind of, they were threatening to let everything slip away and let South Alabama win the Sun Belt West. And then they just said, you know what? No. And went out and just absolutely won every single play of the fourth quarter, scored whatever it was, 28 points in the fourth quarter, ran away with the game. That it was encouraging to see. That was something where they were not going to let it get away. And I think unless McCall not only plays, but plays really, really, really well, this is Troy's by double digits.
I'm going to go the opposite way. And I really shouldn't after.
I was going to say.
I offered the unabashed apology that I never should have taken Coastal and the two touchdowns thinking they would keep it close against James Madison. But we were talking earlier about teams that just play close games. Now, Troy hasn't in the last two. They played 7 single-digit games this year. 7. Almost every game is single digits. Well, the spread's almost that. So, look, I thought McCall was out for the year. Now, Pete, you're the guy who's locked in on all of this. I smell a rat here that it's just some type of something to throw Troy off the scent somehow, or maybe just being that weird coaching thing of I'm not going to divulge anything about injuries, even though everybody knows. Maybe Grayson goes out there and plays. I don't know. But, I was under the impression that it was a wrap for him for this year. But even so, I'm going to say there's still a little pride in the Shots program, and the number's big enough for them to maybe sneak in the back door, hang around. Maybe Troy plays as it did against Arkansas State for a while. I don't like the Shots to win. Not down close to that game's at Troy, right, Bill? Is that right? Okay. Yep. You go down into the Wiregrass region of Alabama, you better be girded for battle. And so Troy's going to be ready to go. Got a really good team. I hope Marshall plays. We've got a little something special set for him on College Game Day Saturday morning to pay tribute to him and hear from him a little bit. So I hope he's able to go 100%. I think Troy's going to win it, but I'm going to take the points. I may live to regret it, but I'm going to take the points. Now I hope Grayson McCall has a miracle healing.
As a Mizzou fan, I very much know about going to Troy.
And, yes, you do.
Bad things happening. So.
Yeah, that's right.
The SEC title game is next. Georgia, a 17.5 point favorite against LSU in Atlanta. Let's go, Bill, Reese, Pete.
So for my Friday column, I like anytime I have to write a lot about a game with a pretty big line, I try to start with the whole, like, what would an upset look like kind of deal? Like, well, let's frame this, see how realistic I can make this. Let's play a little trick here. Well, it starts with Jaden Daniels running well, but his ankle's sprained and it's hard to really count on that. Well, LSU plays really good man defense. Georgia hasn't seen a lot. Well, but Bernard Converse is in or out and their secondary is banged up. And basically anything I try to talk myself into this game being close just didn't work, didn't hold up. I don't see this game being close. I think LSU had a lovely season, had a lovely run. I don't think it was just some fall asleep and get let down last week against A&M. I think they've run out of gas. The wrong guys are hurt. They might come back, but they might not be 100%. I think Georgia very, very big in this game.
I think the same. You look for motivation in different places, and you'd obviously rather have the national championship ring than anything else. But there are only two players on Georgia's roster that own an SEC championship ring, Robert Beal Jr. and Stetson Bennett, who won one when he was the quarterback for Herschel Walker. Those are the only two. They haven't won it since 2017. And that would be a nice little thing to add to the legacy there. Stetson, you know, hasn't thrown for a lot of yards lately. I think they'll get that going. I think they'll run at Harold Perkins to try to neutralize him. I learned that from spending some time with David Pollack this week, not in Georgia game plan, but just from watching areas in which the LSU stud freshman is going to have to improve, as Perkins is already a dynamic pass rusher, big at chasing plays down. Still a little light, you know, and they can run at him. And Georgia's been known to do that. If Daniels can't escape, Georgia's been known to get after a quarterback or two. So I think the dogs roll. I think they roll big. And it'll be very reminiscent of the last time Brian Kelly was in a conference championship game and ran into Clemson in Notre Dame's 1 year in the ACC. And I'm going to take Georgia big.
Well, you guys are just like going to let me run away with this thing, aren't you? Huh?
I've been kind of keeping track all the disagreements here. So there's not going to be a tie for first. I don't think somebody's going to win
good.
A couple.
That's good. We at least want clarity. If people have had to listen to our miserable picks all year, at least we don't have to, like,
that's right.
Be miserably the least miserable.
Yeah. They don't deserve a tie after all of this. That's for sure.
Yeah. It's like a big septic meatball of picks. Not good. I'm not going to take Georgia for the simple reason that they certainly have blown out teams, right? But when they have faced decently stiff competition, I mean, they wouldn't have covered if it was 17.5 against Kent State. So I just feel like LSU defensively is going to keep their offense in modest check. And there's been a penchant for slow starts and sleepy quarters. And again, it's a zit on the Mona Lisa. Georgia's really good. They're the best team in the country. But if Kentucky can slow them down in that way and Georgia Tech can kind of goof around with them for a half, I just really think that in Missouri, that's certainly the prime example, the flaw of their mortalness, or their fallibility, I guess is probably a better word there. I think that LSU could mess around and keep it close. It was interesting that Brian Kelly distinguished that Jaden was in a walking boot, but did not have a high ankle sprain. So they're trying to get better. When you hear high ankle, like, they're gone the next week, right? I mean, Reese, you've traded in this injury game a lot longer than I have. And I really feel like if Jaden Daniels is there with a little giddy up, they could cause Georgia problems. Like Bill said, that's the start if you're drawing up the upset path. That's the first mile marker on it. But that said, I think LSU's defense is sound enough to to keep this thing, you know, moderately close. So I will take the backdoor Tigers.
The AAC title game is next. UCF at Tulane. Tulane, a 3.5-point favorite. Let's go Reese, Pete, Bill.
This was a really entertaining game the last time. UCF jumped out to a big lead. John Rhys Plumlee had a 67-yard touchdown run, but now he's got a bad hamstring. But, oh, wait, that's no problem, because a couple of times this season when John Rhys has gotten banged up, Mikey Keene comes off to save the day. He did it against Cincinnati. He did it against USF. Surprisingly, that he had to do it against USF after they came back and made it a game. So, you know, I've been a little skeptical of Tulane a couple of times. I've expected losses. I expected the UCF loss. Got it. Expected the Cincinnati loss, even though I haven't been really high on Cincinnati. Didn't get it, and was wildly impressed by Tulane. You guys may have a piece of information that I haven't been able to find yet. Is there a reason that Tyjae Spears only got 8 carries in the first game against UCF? Because he had a 70-yard run in the game, had 130 yards, but only carried it 8 times. I know he had injuries in the preseason. Did he get nicked up in that game? Or do we not know?
As far as I know, it was more just that they were down early and just kind of started throwing the ball around.
Yeah.
Well, they just lost track of him.
They're not going to make that mistake again. I think when we picked this game last time, maybe you and I came down on the same side of this, that UCF probably just had a few higher end players that would make the difference. And that is probably still true. But I'm going with Tulane. I'm riding too many waves for this championship week, no pun intended. But I think they'll get the ball to Spears more. I think they've developed a great deal of swagger and confidence, and they've answered every challenge. They came back against UCF and, you know, gave them a run after getting way behind. Every time Cincinnati looked like they'd pulled the thing out of the fire last week, Tulane answered and won the game. UCF rush defense is a little bit sketchy. Yards per carry, it's like almost 4.5, a little under that, you know, sort of bottom half of the country. They won't lose track of Spears. Well, the UCF defense might, but the Tulane brain trust on offense will not. He gets the ball more. Pratt has a good day. Tulane wins it and goes. I think that would put them almost certainly in the Cotton Bowl.
So Tulane ended that UCF game, you know, seemingly like they figured something out in the second half. They had to crank up the tempo a little bit, crank up the pressure. They were down at various times, 24-7, 31-14, and they ended up making it a one score game at the end. Old friend Valentino Ambrosio, the man who could have toppled the Michigan dynasty before he started kicking the extra points. He's a former Rutgers kicker who famously missed a pair of chances against Michigan in the COVID year. Yes. You don't forget a Valentino Ambrosio. that's for certain. So, I just saw his name looking at the box score here. Made me smile. I forgot he had gone down to the Bayou. Not a lot culturally similar from Rutgers to Tulane, I would think.
That's a good, you're just getting life experiences here. A good move on his part.
Yeah, there's probably still a lot of students from New Jersey, but other than that, it'd be a good experience. All right, all that said, sidebars, I think that the Willie Fritz flirtation with Georgia Tech, which obviously ended when they promoted Brent Key, is a galvanizing moment for this team, right? In this program, you know, pushing forward, does Michael Pratt come back and keep rolling? He's obviously one of the best G5 quarterbacks, has been pretty much his entire career there. So I would just think the moment and the opportunity combined with the momentum from how they finished that game and then have played since give me a little edge to the wave.
Well, we finally agree on one. So congrats to you at UCF, I guess.
But, oh, they're going to win it all. Oh, no. Yeah,
they,
oh,
well. to me, this does feel like, you know, a couple of different things going into Tulane's factor. Number one is, I mean, UCF just started their last game perfectly. You know, they jump out, they scored their first three drives, four of their first five, they go up 24-7. And from that point forward, you know, 24-14 Tulane, despite getting away from the run and all that, they still really kind of ratcheted things up. But even beyond that, they responded to that loss by destroying SMU and then going to Nippert and winning at Cincinnati. And like we were saying a week ago, Cincinnati's a team that all year knew how to look disappointing and then win anyway. And so, yeah, like when they took the lead in the fourth quarter, like, well, Tulane gave it a good run. And then instead they just responded and immediately got a touchdown and made two more stops. So that was, I was blown away by how they responded. And meanwhile, UCF responded by losing to Navy and then almost losing to UCF. Both of those can be excused in a vacuum. The Navy thing, they just fell asleep and Navy played really well. And UCF always seems to play them really well, but that didn't, I feel like in any sort of trend points in Tulane's direction here. And they really do have a lot going for them in this regard. This is a humongous moment for that program. So hopefully Willie Fritz staying drives them a little extra and they get it done. That'd be a really fun story.
UCF by 50.
Yep.
It is good!
The Mountain West title game between Fresno State. They are traveling to Boise State. Boise State, a 3-point favorite. Let's go Pete, Bill, Reese.
Well, the Boise turnaround has kind of been one of the less talked about stories of this season. Things looked bad early on. They fired offensive coordinator Tim Plow. Hank Bachmeyer, really a four-year starter at quarterback, jumped in the portal. Now, they luckily had Dirk Cutter sitting around the staff room, his former NFL head coach who could call some plays and get things back on track. But the boys in blue now, it looks like Boise again, right? When you see him getting blown off the field against UTEP, it does not look like that did not look like the Boise we've come to know really the last 15 years or so. So they other than losing to BYU in a close game, they've been rocking and rolling since their early stumbles. So what have they won then, Bill? 7 of 8?
Yes.
Something like that. Yeah. And I'm gonna roll with the hot team. I just really feel like Hayner being back and healthy has been a big boon, obviously, to Fresno, but really the transfer of Bachmeyer has allowed the Boise offense to open up a little bit and then just look a little bit different, quite frankly. Talen Green is one of the most promising young players in college football. He's one of the more dynamic runners that we've seen at that position in recent years at the Group of Five level. And it may turn out to be at any level when it all comes down to it. And 12 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, but he has some Vince Young to him on the ground. He's averaging 7.2 yards a carry. He's rushed for almost 500 yards. And he's got some giddy up in his step. So I think he's the biggest weapon on the field, and I'm going to go with the Broncos.
Yeah, I think I've said the word trends a lot in this last hour or so, and to me, trends point in both of these teams' directions at the moment. They really did. I think these were two of my wrongest picks in the world to start the season with the way Fresno and Boise both played. Obviously, injuries were part of that, but Boise was just a giant mess. And now you look and these two teams are in the conference title game like they were supposed to be. I do think I'm going to go Boise basically because I think they have the single best unit in this game, and that's their defense. 8th in points allowed per drive, 6th in yards allowed per drive. They don't miss tackles. They cover really, really, really well. I think just the offenses have been kind of up and down, and the quarterbacks have been in and out and hurt and whatnot and all of that. But in the end, Boise's defense is really, really, really good. And so I'd say this is more like a Boise by 7 kind of game. It should be really fun, though. These are by far the two hottest teams in this conference and in a very, very mediocre Mountain West. But this should still be a pretty high-quality game.
When Fresno State left that game against Boise State on the blue in early October, they walked out of there 1-4. They didn't have their quarterback. And yet, with 16 minutes left in the game, they were tied with Boise at 20. Now, the Broncos scored the last 20 after that. Following week, Haener still didn't play, and Fresno only put up 17. But after that, 41, 32, 55, 37, 41, 30. Haener's back. They're a different team. Boise State is certainly better. I agree with you, Pete, about Green, but I'm going to go with Fresno State and take the points. I think that veteran quarterback, they're hot. Haven't lost since that night, since they walked out. I say they'll avenge the loss and turn a 20-point loss into an outright victory. Or if they don't do that, I would prefer it if they lose by less than three.
The Big Ten title game in Indianapolis, Michigan, a 16.5-point favorite against Purdue. Let's go Bill, Reese, Pete.
Now, when you asked earlier about liking the Pac-12 title game on Friday night, my general answer is yes. In this case, putting it on Saturday, giving you one more viewing option might not be the worst thing in the world with the way the big marquee game here might shape up. I tried the same thing. Like, let me talk myself into Purdue. How would I talk myself into Purdue having a chance in this game? It was difficult. They are a very efficient defense. They can force you behind schedule. They are one of the best third down defenses in the country. So that could be one of those things where it just slowly adds up over time, where it feels like Michigan's doing pretty well, but every time they get in a third and six, they end up punting and Purdue stays close into the third quarter or something. That's definitely on the table. Ohio State had a pretty efficient defense too, and Michigan absolutely just tore the top off, however. And I think at this point, you know, with what we saw in last year's Big Ten championship game, the way that Michigan responded to the Ohio State win, that was a long time ago, but it was an extra data point in favor of Michigan playing really, really well in this game. And if they play really well, Purdue is not staying close at all. So I'm gonna go. This is the one game where my numbers very much disagree with the line. They say like Michigan by 24 or something, and I'm gonna take that hint and go Michigan.
There's reasons to take Purdue for me in this game. I don't think you'll see, there are a bunch of Wolverines. The most impressive part of that Michigan win was that there were a bunch of Wolverines who were some of the better players in that roster who really didn't impact the game. Yeah. Right. Blake Corum did not impact the game. Mike Morris did not impact the game. And I would think some of those players, they're just not going to play. Now, obviously winning a Big Ten championship's important, but that with the playoff in the bag, they're not going to risk further injury. I mean, in retrospect, Corum probably shouldn't have played, right? Like, if you're going to run two plays and tap out, you're there kind of for a Willis Reed reason more than you are for, being actually able to help the team. So, I could talk myself into Purdue, but I just do think this will be a methodical 4.5 yard a carry, pound, 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 pound type game. And it was interesting that, you know, one of Purdue's best wins this season was against Illinois. And I consider Illinois a little bit of a clone of Michigan in a lot of ways. And I think that's the reason why Illinois is like the new Wisconsin. My theory is that Harbaugh has turned Michigan into like a better version of Wisconsin, like a tricked up Badgers from the Hallmark Bielma era, essentially. So by all this Wisconsin association, I just don't think Purdue can go pound for pound with them on the lines for 60 minutes. And I do still have that image of Iowa just completely capitulating on the stage last year in my mind. I do think there's a little happy to be there from the Magic Boilermakers. Good for Jeff Brohm and the boys, but I'm going to take the Wolverines.
You know, we often don't, you know, delve too much into the serious and the sad on this podcast, but I do want to extend on behalf of all of us our condolences to Aidan O'Connell, just a tragedy with the sudden passing of his oldest brother, Sean. It's impacted him personally, obviously. And also he's been away from the team a little bit. So, we'll see if he's in position emotionally and whether it's the right thing for him personally to play. I assume it is. I think that's what they expect. Aiden has been at his best in games against ranked opponents. He's won 4 of the 5. It's well known throughout the annals of college football, the moniker Spoiler Makers, because Purdue went unranked 9 times in their history. They've beaten a team ranked in the top 2 top two, you know, and that's five more times than anybody else in the sport has done that. And so there's a little something to it that they've, you know, they believe they're built for this spot. It's sort of in their DNA. But I don't see it this time. I think it'll be very much like the Big Ten championship game a year ago in which Michigan dominated. I don't know if the score will be like that, but I think it'll be pretty clear who the best team in the stadium is and the best team in the conference. So I'm going to say Michigan wins. They cover and get back-to-back Big Ten championships and off to the playoff for the second consecutive year, but this time going with a perfect record.
Yeah, that was kind of my thought when we're heading down the stretch. I'm like, well, I don't want to see Iowa again. We kind of know what that – give us the team that randomly pulls the craziest upsets you've ever seen, even if they still probably get blown up by 24. Just in case, let's put Purdue and see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone was going to pull that upset historically in terms of the DNA of their program, Purdue would be chief on the list. Wisconsin might be sitting in there with a little bit of it too, but mostly it would be Purdue.
Last game here before we get to your locks, the ACC title game in Charlotte. Clemson is a 7.5-point favorite against North Carolina. Let's go Reese, Pete, Bill.
This is a tough one for both teams because this is a consolation bowl big time. I mean, I'm not even, are they going to give the winner the trophy or are they just shipping that to South Bend because Notre Dame beat both of them soundly and Notre Dame plays in the ACC and all of the other sports besides football. I actually had someone reach out on Twitter this week and she was very kind about it. And she was, because I made a similar snarky comment on game day Saturday about Notre Dame being the true ACC champion. And she said, you know, they don't play in the ACC in football. I responded and said, it was a joke. I was kidding because they thrashed both of the teams that are going to play for the ACC championship. So I think, you know, with Clemson coming off that loss last week and somewhere along the line, my guy Drake May has gone face first into the proverbial brick wall. He's hit the freshman wall. It has not been the same the last couple of weeks as it was earlier in the season. I think Clemson's pride has been wounded. I think North Carolina is still capable of scoring, and I don't think Clemson's a juggernaut, and this is really going to be big for DJ Uiagalelei, I think, in terms of his future. I think the competition is going to be open with Klubnik. It almost demands that it will be next year, but you'll see the writing on the wall, perhaps by the way he plays, whether he has a chance to win that competition next year. But I think Clemson will rise up. I think they'll show a little more pride. I think they'll run the ball against North Carolina. And I'm going to say Clemson wins and covers. And after having that streak of six straight ACC crowns snapped last year, they will win another one and bring it back to Clemson.
I'm going to sneak in here quick, and I'm going to echo Reese's thought and take Clemson. I just think the line mismatch, Clemson's defensive line, can be disruptive to an offense that obviously is predicated on speed and timing. So I do think there's some pride in the Clemson program, and to lose the way they did last week, I think we're going to see a response. I don't think Dabo is going to let this team spiral out of the season. So I'm going to take the Tigers.
Well, congrats to the Heels. We're going to end on another unanimous one here. Clemson did respond well to losing to Notre Dame. That was a more shocking loss than South Carolina to me, just because of how dominant it was and how they were beaten physically. And then just turn around and absolutely handled their business against Louisville, a very hot Louisville. So that proves something to me. I think, though, I'm gonna pick Clemson just because we know that they can win games with their quarterback playing poorly. They've had to do it a couple times. DJ Uiagalelei has absolutely improved on average this year. His worst moments this year have almost been worse than his worst moments last year. And they did lose to both Notre Dame and South Carolina with him playing pretty poorly. But if we don't know, if it really is just Drake May hitting a wall, if there's no like other reason for it, he's just kind of done, and you know, he'll head into next season with some good hype, but he's done this year. North Carolina can't beat Clemson without Drake May playing incredibly well. So, you know, that's what it comes down to for me. I think the line play is definitely one factor, and Clemson, they have been there. They've been there plenty, and they're going to probably, they're more likely to play well and show up and just handle their business. So this one has certainly lost all the possible luster it could have. It could have had at one point, but give me Clemson by double digits.
All right, to close it out, your locks for the week, and we are going to make the locks this week because since we picked all the games, we're going to make it a two-pointer. So give me your most confident pick of what you just threw on the board there, Bill Connolly.
I guess I'm going to dare the gods here and say Michigan. Let's see what you can do with Purdue this time. Make something really crazy happen. But I do think, you know, if Michigan plays a B-level game, they're going to handle Purdue's B-level game by quite a bit. So give me the Wolverines.
If we're doubling down on a pick, it should probably, considering all of our collective records this year, make our listeners twice as likely to go against it. That said, if I'm doubling down a pick, I'm going to double down on Clemson. I just feel like North Carolina, which danced with the devil all year, has hit a bit of a wall. And I feel like Clemson's overall defensive talent, as I just said, up front is going to be able to swallow them whole. Drake May has not played well these past few weeks, and I really feel like they'll be able to affect him in the pocket and put more pressure on him than any opponent that North Carolina has seen this year. So I'm going to take the Tigers, Big DJ running the rock, and Clemson figures out a way to bring their own guts and win.
You know, sometimes the things that get etched in your mind and your memory, it takes a hard long time to erase them. And I've got a lot of confidence in the Clemson program bouncing back and answering challenges. I think that loss, letting the lead get away, losing the 7-game winning streak against South Carolina, losing the 40-game home field winning streak, that's the kind of thing that historically Dabo has really been able to pull his team together about. Bill talked earlier about the way they played against Louisville. So I'm going to double down on Clemson winning the ACC championship and covering. That's going to be my two-pointer. I think their defense is going to make life difficult on North Carolina offense, which is really good. Really explosive. Everyone knows what I think of the quarterback and of Josh Downs, but they haven't played as well in the last couple of weeks. And I don't think this is a good time to be catching the fellas in orange and purple. So I'm going to double down on Clemson, and that will be my lock of the week. Gentlemen, really fun. Enjoyed it. We will continue with College Game Day podcast. In the aftermath of Selection Sunday, we'll have the reaction to the four playoff teams, all of the bowls set up, and, of course, make arrangements to pay off the race for the ribeye. This is the College Game Day podcast. Download it wherever you like to get your podcast.